All right, so I mentioned that one of the key elements of this rule is that the lawyer's testimony is necessary. What does that mean? It means that the testimony is needed to establish an essential fact, and it can't be established by other witnesses or evidence. So it can't be cumulative. So if there are other witnesses who could testify to that fact, or maybe that fact isn't relevant or isn't an essential fact in the case, the lawyer witness rule won't apply. So how does the rule apply to in-house counsel? Well, the answer is it's probably rarely going to apply, because it's only going to apply if all of these four factors are present. Where the lawyer's serving as an advocate, meaning they're counsel of record, they're standing up making an argument in court, and they're doing that in a trial or an adjudicatory proceeding, not just in a simple pretrial proceeding like a deposition. Now, there's some case law that indicates a summary judgment hearing would be an adjudicatory proceeding, and therefore the rule would be implicated. Another factor is that the lawyer's a necessary witness. So there aren't other witnesses who can testify to that essential fact that the lawyer would be testifying on. And the fourth factor is that none of the exceptions apply. So it's not an issue about authenticating a document or a fee-shifting situation. And so the point is that all four of those factors are rarely present, but it does happen. I once got a call on vacation from a general counsel 3 days before a summary judgment hearing. He had inserted himself into the case as a witness by signing a very detailed affidavit in opposition to summary judgment. He'd also verified some interrogatory responses, and therefore the rule is triggered, and he asked me to come and argue the summary judgment hearing while I was on vacation. I flew home, argued it, and then we eventually had a two-week jury trial, all because of this rule. So it does come into play from time to time. All right, let's talk about confidential information. The key point here is that it's much broader than we typically think. It's not just privileged information. Here are the applicable rules, but the duty applies to privileged and non-privileged information, and it applies to any information that's obtained from any source that's confidential in nature, that's communicated in confidence. So you don't have to get the information from your client. Maybe you got it from a third party who told you something in confidence about that client. That could be confidential information and subject to the duty of confidentiality. There are exceptions, like when the client gives informed consent, or where the lawyer reasonably believes the disclosure of confidential but non-privileged information is necessary to comply with law or court order. And there are cases indicating that a subpoena would satisfy that exception. This recent formal opinion from the ABA gives you some guidance on what to do when you get a subpoena that seeks confidential information. Basically, a lawyer should consult with a client, talk about what's being asked, talk about the duty of confidentiality, talk about the risks of disclosing confidential information. And then if the client requests, the lawyer should take all reasonable steps to oppose the subpoena, including potentially file a motion for protective order or seek to quash the subpoena, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then disclose confidential information only as necessary to comply with the subpoena or court order. So how does this duty apply to in-house counsel? Well, obviously in-house counsel is exposed to enormous amounts of confidential information. They essentially have one client, and they're with that client almost every day. And that confidential information is pumped into their head, it crosses their desk every day, and that raises the stakes for in-house counsel with respect to confidential information and their duty of confidentiality, and your duty as outside counsel to help in-house counsel protect that information. So what do you do if the client requests in-house counsel to testify? Well, per the rules we looked at, seek informed consent. Talk to the client about the duty, the confidentiality duty, the risks of testifying, the risk that some confidential information will be disclosed, the risk that more confidential information may be disclosed on cross-examination, and what are the alternatives? Who are the alternative witnesses who could provide the information in lieu of in-house counsel? If an opposing party requests in-house counsel to testify, follow that ABA opinion, consult with the client, assert reasonable arguments in opposition, seek to quash the subpoena, move for a protective order, and then disclose only confidential information as necessary to comply. Let's shift gears and talk about privileged information, because this is where the real risks are. As this cartoon suggests, the attorney-client privilege is riddled with exceptions and can easily be waived, And that's especially true when we're talking about in-house counsel. We'll talk about the elements of the privilege, elements of the work product doctrine, and how those lines are really blurred when you're talking about in-house counsel. And that's why it's so risky to put in-house counsel, who's at the epicenter of the privilege, at the epicenter of work product for the client, on the stand as a witness. Just some basics here. The elements of the privilege, of course, are confidential communication between a client and an attorney or their representatives for the purpose of seeking, obtaining, or providing legal advice. The purposes, we all know, full and fair communication between the lawyer and client. And even though it's an important privilege, courts narrowly construe it and it can be waived. Elements of work product, of course, are materials prepared in anticipation of litigation, buyer for a party, or buyer for a party's representative. Purpose is different. It protects the adversarial process. It's also narrowly construed and can be waived, and it can also be compelled to be disclosed under the situations here, substantial need and hardship, or compelling need when you're talking about opinion work product.